Hope everybody had an awesome Christmas this year. I hope you don't mind if I take a seat in the stool. It seems to make things easier and more comfortable, I think. So, actually, Greg said, if I recall this right, that when somebody got to teach, the teacher would sit down and the whole entire audience would stand up.
Right.
I was joking. So, there's this revolving message that Greg's been teaching for the past few years, and you know, it seems to be a constant theme, you know, in my life, and you know, and just you know, all around. There's this theme of bringing our lives completely underneath the lordship of Jesus Christ, as you know, Greg would say it, and really, it's been something I've been thinking about a lot lately too. You know, it's how you surrender to God. I really don't like that word. You know, because to surrender, that means you've given complete control, you know, to God over every single little area of your life. Complete control. You don't have a choice where He leads you to. And so, there's actually a song I want to play for you guys. It's about 10 minutes long, so if you can bear with me. It's called Worlds Apart by Jars of Clay. So go ahead and play that.
To blame for this. Somehow it all ends up the same. Soaring on the wings of selfish pride, flew too high, like Icarus I collide. In the world I tried so hard to leave behind, to rid myself of all but love, to give and die. Turn away and not become another nail to pierce the skin of one who loved more deeply than the oceans, more abundant than the tears of a world embracing every heartache. And can I be the one to sacrifice or grip the spear and watch the blood and water flow? Said and done, I stand alone amongst remains of a life I should not own. It takes all I am to believe in the mercy that covers me. And did you really have to die? All I am for all you are, 'cause what I need and what I believe are worlds apart. So I pray, take my world apart. I am cross, forgetting what my life has cost. Wipe away the crimson stains, the dull, the nails that still remain. One more, I need you now. I owe you more, it's passing out. Battles between grace and pride, gave up not so long ago. So steal my heart, take the pain, wash my feet and cleanse my pride. Take the selfish, take the weak, and all the things I cannot hide. Take my beauty, take my tears, sin so torn me. I can't deny. Wash away all I used to love. Fall to dust.
That's actually probably one of my favorite songs, you know, and actually my favorite band. And, you know, it's just incredible because there is, we're very independent beings. You ever notice that? What's the difference between an elementary-aged kid and a middle schooler? What's the big difference? An elementary-age kid has no idea where that meal on the table came from. And does it bother them? No. They are dependent. Right? Now you get to the middle school age, right? And, you know, this is teen rebellion. Because they want to become independent. They having their parents do stuff for them. They hate, you know, having to rely on their parents. They want to be their own persons, even though they still eat at home and sleep at home and, you know, you give them a roof over their head. You know, that's the big difference between the two ages, is that one is completely dependent and one is completely independent. And Matthew 19... Verse 13 through 15, it says, "Then the little children were brought to Jesus, to him, to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me, and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these.' When he had his hands on them, he went on from there." There's actually a very important lesson, you know, in this, because I think the older that we get, the more independent we become. We get our own jobs, we go to school, we learn stuff, we get our head full of knowledge, and, you know, knowledge is good, knowledge is great, but we become very independent and we lose our dependency on God and that aspect of our relationship with God. And so the most difficult thing for us to say, since we're so independent, well, more independent than we think we actually are, is that you can have it. Right? Those are the most difficult words that we can ever tell God. I mean, you can have it all. It's yours. It's completely in your hands, in your control. I trust you. And, you know, that's where the word surrender comes in. And it's a word I really don't like, because I hate giving all of my whole entire life and every area of my life that I like to control over to God, because this is a very difficult thing for me to do, because it's in my nature to be the opposite. And so, trust, that's what faith's all about. I mean, that's, it's impossible to please God without faith, because you have to trust that He exists, you have to trust in His promise to us, you have to have, that's how you have hope in Him, you have to trust Him. And, you know, there's some pretty big areas that we have no problem giving to God, like our finances or what to believe. Those are some major areas in our life, right? What school should I go to? What should my ministry be? I mean, God doesn't just take those areas of our lives. He takes every bit and every piece of our lives. The good things in our lives and the bad things in our lives. Right? He uses the good, He uses the bad. He uses every pain, every tear, every moment of joy, every moment of happiness. I mean, all. It's all or nothing with God. Right? I mean, I'll give you this area of my life, but, you know, this area is going to kind of go this way. It's its own section. It's fine. I got this all under control. This, you know, everything's great and peachy over here. I'll worry about this, and I'll tell you what, I'll give you this and this and this and this. I mean, we kind of work out all these different deals with God, and it's like, okay, I'll tell you what, jobs, finances, marriage, all right, great, God, you can have it. But my emotional contentment, my happiness, me not liking my next-door neighbor, I'll worry about that. Right? That's our attitude when it comes to God. We only give specific areas, you know, to God, and it's because we love to control our own lives. It's because we're too afraid to give it to Him. Yeah, there is a truth that I find comfort in, though, and that is that God is in absolute control, right? Can you go against the will of God? You know, think about this for a second. He is an infinite being. He's omnipresent. He's omniscient, omnipotent, and eternal. I mean, you can't beat that. There is no going against God. There is no such thing as outside of God's plan, because he already knows it all. He knows what's going to happen. It's in his hands. It's in his control. And that's one of the perks of being an infinite being, right? But I find that the area that I find the most comfort in, I also really don't like, because I really wish Josh was in control. I wish there was structure. I wish there was a set way. But I find that you have to just live and trust and walk with God completely. And so there's one popular word in America. Everybody has a TV here, right? Who has a TV? Raise your hands. Show of hands. TV. Who has a TV remote? What's the second word in the remote? What's that? Control. Remote control. What's that?
And we fight over who gets it.
Yeah, we fight. Because whoever has remote control controls what's on the TV, right? You know, that is a very popular word in America, control. We love to have control. You know, two big things that we love to have control over in our lives is politics and food. I'm more of a fan of food, but when it comes to politics, right, we go and we vote who we think we should be in office, and we vote for that person because we think they are doing things the way we think they should be done. Am I right? Is that why we vote for certain politicians and all that? You know, it's our right to be heard, and it's our right to decide who runs our country and how they run the country. Now, when you're voting for somebody, do you really have confidence in that person? Because they're not doing things the way you expected them to? You know, if there was a completely honest politician out there who really did everything correct and nobody's perfect, I don't think we would really like them. Because we don't understand the mechanics of, politicians or what it takes. How about food? Let's go to a more popular subject here, right? You used to sit down, with your family and have a nice cooked meal, which took time to prepare. Okay. But now we've got something called fast food. Anytime, anywhere, any town. Have it your way, like BK says. I'm loving it, like McDonald's says. I mean, meal combinations, a steakhouse burger with no tomato. Control's popular in America. And how about when it comes to religion? There's this popular thing in America where truth becomes relative to the individual. Is it possible for truth to be relative to the individual? No, it's not. But what's more popular? A truth that everybody can be happy with, or something that's absolute? So America loves to have control. America loves to, be the boss. They love to dictate their own life. They love to forge their own paths. They love to, define their own truth, define their own happiness, and seek what makes them fully content. Then they kind of, in their life, they run into this wall. That won't move. God is an absolute being. The other night at the Christmas service, we're talking about names. My favorite name is I Am. Actually, it's a complete sentence, too. Right? I Am. Now, think about that for a minute. I Am. God says, that's it. Two words, I Am, and that describes God's entire being and God's entire existence, excuse me, and what he's capable of. You know, I Am, meaning I am everything. I am eternal. I am all-powerful. I am all-knowing. I am always present. It's defining an infinite being. And since his being is perfect, it's absolute, that means it never changes. That means there's only one truth. There's only one way. God set it in stone. And since the beginning of time, God has never changed. He's always been the same all of time. America and God don't go hand in hand. I don't think America would get along with God too well. Because when it comes to God, you can't be independent. Because God is in control. You can't define your own truth because God is truth. You can't create life like God could because he's all-powerful. You know, God is an unmovable force, whether we like it or not. Another fancy word was mentioned was immutable, which actually I got to learn about, which means unchanging. Now tell me this. Would you rather have somebody who changes every 10 seconds or somebody who stays the same the entire time? God's unchangeable nature makes him reliable. God's unchangeable nature makes him true to his word. In fact, I think there's more security in, you know, that than somebody who lies, who doesn't keep their promises or their oaths. And so, you know, there is, you know, security within God's absolute nature. It's just getting over ourselves first. Jesus. He's probably one of the most profound personalities to ever exist, you know, in his day and age and, you know, in actually all of time. I mean, there's never been anybody who's like him. He's probably one of the greatest mysteries to ever exist just because his, the way he taught, the way he did things, and what he was, it just doesn't make sense. And actually, he's such a, he was so structurally sound, so solid in what was true. He created what was called the trilemma. Actually, Josh McDowell calls it the trilemma. Jesus is either a lunatic, a liar, or he's telling the truth. If he's lying, we shouldn't listen to him, right? You know, you're not going to listen to a lie. I mean, the lie cannot save you. A lie cannot lead you to the truth because it's a lie. There's alternate, you know, motivation there. That person doesn't really care. I mean, so if he's a liar, we completely dismiss him. If he's a lunatic, he can be under the illusion that he's telling the truth, but does that make it truth? So again, we have to disregard him if he's a lunatic. But what if he's telling the truth? And if he's telling the truth, do we really have an option but to follow him? You know, the world tries to pass Jesus off as a good moral teacher. And this is where the picking and choosing comes in at. I will take love thy neighbor, love thy enemy. Bread of life, not so much. or changing my life to follow and obey his teaching. I'm not going to give that either. I'm going to only take this part and this part and this part. But if you really look at Jesus' life, he set himself up in such a way that you can only take him or you can leave him. You can't take him any other way. It's impossible just to pass him off as a good moral teacher. It's impossible to just shrug him off to the side. He either has to be a liar or he has to be telling the truth. John chapter 6, verse 68 says, "Lord, whom will we go? For you heard the words of life." Those are the words of the disciple Peter. The events that happened in the pretext, to this chapter was Jesus had a crowd about 5,000 or less. We don't know exactly but this is only assuming, because this takes place after the events of the feeding of the 5,000 people. And so we don't know how many people were there. But the Jews who were there, after Jesus fed the 5,000 people, tried to take Jesus and force him to be king, and he withdrew. Okay. You got to realize that in that time, the Roman government was the big power of that day. They had control. They tried to Hellenize the Jews, meaning convert them to a universalist, type religion. Right? The Jews didn't like that because they're a one-God nation. So they didn't like the Roman Empire. They wanted the Roman Empire gone. They were being oppressed by the Roman Empire, taxed by the Romans, killed by the Romans. So when Jesus came, after 400 years of not a single prophet coming to deliver their nation, imagine what they would paint the Messiah as. King, militant king, one who's going to make Israel as great as the days of Solomon or David. Israel's going to be a great nation again. It's going to be a powerful nation again with the highest influence in the whole entire world. And, when Jesus came and he performed all these miracles and this proof where he came from, they said, he must be a prophet. So they knew where he had come from. They had their own ideas, their own plans on how things should be done. And so when Jesus did his Jesus thing, walked across the water, without scaring his disciples to death, got to the other side, the crowd eventually figured out, there he is, right? Because they're looking for him the next day. He began teaching them that I am the bread of life, I am the way. And really, he was preaching heaven to them. I've got a different plan here. This is what I'm going to give you instead. Because what you want isn't the best way. What you think is the best way is not the best way. And the crowd did not take too kindly to that. In fact, they started, making stumbling blocks, for themselves. Oh, he's telling us to eat his flesh. What's he talking about? Drink his blood, eat his flesh, and all these different things. The crowd could not comprehend because they weren't willing to let go of their own ideas, their own plans, their own agenda, their own traditions, in order to accept a truth that would save them. Truly save them and give them something far much better. And Jesus, then, after he saw them grumbling and getting ready to walk away, he didn't say sorry. Or surprise. He let them walk. They could not accept him completely. In their minds, Jesus was crazy. And so he lost a large number of his disciples that day, his followers. Probably the worst sermon ever preached. And so 12 remained, which were, you know, his 12 disciples that he traveled around with and, you know, taught to, you know, in private. And, you know, Peter, you know, says this incredible statement, because I don't think Peter quite comprehended what Christ was talking about at this point until much later. Peter saw that he healed the sick, that he drove out the demons, that he fed 5,000 people. Only this person can be from heaven. He says, "Lord, to whom will we go? For you hold the words of life." You know, Peter said, "You're the only way." And I may not understand what you're saying, and, you know, this might go completely against what I've been raised in, but I've got to accept this truth because I don't know where else to go. You know, this is the way, this is the truth. The thing we got to realize when it comes to God and when we read scriptures, His word is good and God is good. So if God is calling you somewhere, it's not because He's trying to rob you of your joy and your delight and your happiness. It's because He's trying to lead you to something far greater, something much better. You know, God is faithful. His promise is that, you know, He is good to us. He will be good to us. I mean, you read, you know, the Bible, and these are all of His promises to us. This is His word to us. But the thing is, you know, we got to be willing to follow it. We got to be willing to humbly accept the word that's been planted in us. So, there is no pick and choose Jesus. There is no middle of the fence. You know, it's all or nothing. Surrendering to the truth is probably going to be my first point here. Because even though we have a different idea, if we see God's taking us this way, it's time to break down, humble ourselves before a God who is infinitely wise, and say, "I will accept this word." Now, will we fully comprehend it? Will we fully understand God's entire plan? No. I don't think we will. And can we be content with that? Because the only way to be content with that is if you trust God and if you know God is good. So humbly accept the word that has been planted in you. Trust me. I know where I'm taking you to. I know how to get you there. And this is what can save you. This is how I'm wanting you to live in this world. And so let's move on to the second point here. So there are some areas, you know, in my own personal life which I really don't like being too public about. The bad things or how I feel about certain things. How hard is it for a guy to be honest with how he feels? He's too worried about his image to be honest how he feels, right? Sad, if you're depressed, if you're happy, or something's bugging you. All those areas in my life I'd like to throw under lock and key. And even though talking to somebody about them makes things so much better, I still want to take those areas of my life and put them under lock and key and be the one that works that area in my life out. Because when you're talking about my emotions and how I feel, you're talking about my heart, which is the wellspring of my life. It's my passions, what I desire. It's the thing that animates me to live. You know, that's actually a very large portion, you know, of my life, and, you know, has control over a very large portion of my life. Specifically when it comes to my ministry, too. You know, Because in America, we love to seek emotional contentment. Okay, show of hands, who loves being happy? Right? Smile. You love being happy. We love pleasure. We love joy. We love all the things that make us feel warm and fuzzy inside. We enjoy relationships. We enjoy friendships. By our design, we were made to experience these things. It's part of who we are. And by design, actually no, by fear, this is the area of our lives that we'd like to hold on the tightest to. Imagine your happiness, your future, your career, and how you want things to work out. Imagine somebody coming up to you and saying, "Don't worry about it at all. In fact, the plans that you had for your life, let those completely fade away. Let go." The person that you want to be with, let that go. Your desire for friendships, let it go. How willing are you to let all that go? All your plans, all your relationships with the people around you, and your emotional contentment and your happiness. You know, in our minds, my emotional contentment, my happiness, and all the things that bring me joy, everything that's going to make me successful in life is dependent on my plans. That's our mindset. Right? So, wow, that's really loud, isn't it? So, when, you know, there's a... let's look at a high school student fresh out of college. Fresh out of high school. No. The kid was really smart. And okay, so they have a plan. They have, you know, this whole, all of it worked out. I'm going to work my day job at McDonald's. I'm going to save up a couple $1,000s. I'm going to buy a car. I'm going to get in at... let's say, what's a random college name here? Jeffersonville Local Community College or something like that, right? And they've got this whole entire plan worked out and together, and it's all going to be great, it's all going to go well. But tell me, 5 minutes from now, what's going to happen? If you want to take a shot at it, go right ahead. Actually really glad I did not take a drink. There is an infinite amount of possibilities that can happen in the future. Can I know what's going to happen a minute from now? I can make some predictions. Do I know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now? No, I don't know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. Do I know what's going to be 15, 20 years down the road, where I'm going to be at, how I'm going to be doing things, and what's going on? No, I have no clue what's going to happen. 4 or 5 years ago, I couldn't possibly fathom where I'd be right now. What school I'm going to, what church I'm teaching at, and all these different things. I had no idea where I would have been. Right? Do we know what's going to happen in the future? No. Does God know what's going to happen in the future? Yes. He's very aware of what's going to happen in the future. And if God is a good God, and he's true to his promises, because he's just an absolutely perfect being, and he is mindful of his creation, you think he's going to be mindful of the needs that we have. Now, it's not always about making us happy. It's always about what's best for us. Right? Relationship-wise, right? Who you're going to marry in the future. This is a big part of your happiness, and this is a big part of your contentment. Love, liberty, and contentment. Is that how it goes? You have the right to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay, so, you know, who you're going to be with in the future, or who's going to be my friends, and, you know, all these different things. You know, are we ever, will we ever know? No. And, you know, tell me about it. What good is it going to do you to sit there and plan it all out when God probably has other plans? And so, the best course of action is let it go. I don't like it. You don't like it. I don't think anybody would like it. Let me see if I can find this verse really quick. In Matthew, yeah, I believe this is Sermon on the Mount. There's an entire section which our Bibles label it as "Do not worry." Whistle your worries away. And Jesus makes reference to nature in this passage. You know, we're talking about my life here, God. Why are you talking about lilies and birds and the grass in the fields? I really don't want to be chopped up by a lawnmower, you know, going past. He says, you know, look at the lilies in the field. I'll tell you what, these lilies are not dressed, or actually, no, they are. Not even Solomon, I better read this. See how the lilies in the field grow? They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass on the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will not much more clothe you, O little faith, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, what shall we drink, what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Wow. God's already aware of what I need. That's cool. Just like he clothes, you know, the flowers of the field and the grass of the field, he's faithful to our needs. You know, for some reason, you know, man is kind of at the center of God's creation. We're the only beings on earth who were made in God's image and God's likeness. Probably the only thing in his creation that's given God heartache. I imagine God will probably have a lot of gray hairs by the time we get to heaven. But he loves us. He's mindful to us. He's faithful to his creation. He wants this creation to know of his love, you know, for us. And so when it comes to our happiness and our contentment, you know, we got to let it go. What happens if we don't let go our own emotional contentment? It becomes something unhealthy. Right? You know, God gave us things in life to enjoy. God gave us things in our life so that we can survive. But the things that we enjoy become destructive. Addictions, right? Materialism. You know, if you ever... has anyone been a friend to an addict before? Okay. Now, what changes about them? Everything. Thank you, Greg. Every bit of them, you know, changes. You know, they start destroying themselves, and not only themselves, but their relationships with the people around them. And why is that? That's because they were seeking their own emotional contentment through whatever they're addicted to. When you seek your own emotional contentment, you kind of lust after the things of the world. You have to pull in more and more and more and more of something that's not going to completely do it. It might do it for a couple seconds, but then you just need more later on. And what happens is that, you know, there becomes this, you kind of get wrapped up in yourself and your own desires and your own needs, which goes completely against what we were created to do. We're created to be loved by God. We're created to love others. And so, our own emotional contentment gives us a judgment that's not really too solid. There's a make mention of, in the Bible, something called sober judgment. Look at yourself with sober judgment. Well, this would be more like non-sober judgment, right? You can't really honestly look at what you're doing. You can't really honestly look at it because you're too concerned about what's going to happen. You're too concerned about being satisfied, about being happy. And so, you know, this word comes in again. Surrender, 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 surrender. That means you give it up completely. You don't worry about it. God says, sleep well tonight. I got it. It's in my hands. Our emotional contentment. I mean, you know, that's just... you got to trust God with it. You know, because we don't know what the future holds for us. We don't know how things work out. And when we do, when we try to do things for ourselves, we end up messing them up really bad. We end up hurting the people that we love and care about. Because where we have the capacity to love and care about others, we also have the capacity to pervert and destroy what God has created. So the most difficult thing for me to give up was my emotional contentment. This is what's going to make me happy in the future. This is what I want to do in the future. And after hours and hours and hours of God giving me the same answer, he eventually had to completely take it away. And tell me, don't worry about it. You know, I haven't really been reading off my thing. I'm probably going to be repeating myself. And so we've got, you know, a couple different needs, you know, that I've identified. We've got our emotional needs, and then we've got our, you know, our physical needs, right? Physical needs being, you know, food, a job, a house to live in. And, you know, in reference to that passage that I read, you know, that talks about the lilies in the field. Is God saying don't work in this passage? No, he's not. He's talking about do not worry. Right? And actually, part of God's blessings in our lives are our jobs. Right? And so that's where the blessings come from. That's where our jobs come from. That's where being financially stable, you know, comes from. God is faithful. He provides. He makes it rain on the good and the evil. And so when it comes to our jobs, when it comes to putting food on the table, when it comes to, you know, financial stability, the S word comes in again. Give it to me. It's really weird that the things that give us the biggest heartache are the things that we have the hardest time letting go of. How am I going to do this? It keeps you awake at night. You lose sleep over it. You worry about, you gotta plan it all out. You gotta figure out how this is, how you're gonna make ends meet. You gotta worry about how, you know, this and that. And, you know, you completely miss out on living your life. You become a very miserable person. And since it's the holidays, I'll say Grinch. You know, completely changes somebody. I mean, you know, these are things that, you know, we got to learn to give them up, you know, to God and let God lead us through our life, because, you know, God doesn't, you know, do everything for us, because you don't wake up in the morning, look at the table, and then there is biscuits and gravy with bacon and eggs sitting right there in front of you. You know, you got to cook the eggs first. But, you know, it's from God. It's a blessing from God. Our jobs and our money and all these different things, you know, are a blessing from God. There was a... Schneider had Blitz a few weeks back, which is a place where my dad works at. All right? Dad was working about 75 hours a week. 6 days a week. That's a lot of work. But he did say this, you know, about it. He said it was a blessing that I had 75 hours of work, because I'm not sure how we would have been able to make it through some things without that work. 75 hours a week barely kept us afloat, is what he said. Who knew extra work would be a great blessing from God? God was faithful and God provided a way. It was just a matter of following and trusting in God. And so, you know, there's this breaking point I think we all come to, you know, as Christians, when it comes to these many areas of our lives, where we are absolutely broken, we're on our knees right before God because we don't know where else to go. You know, that's why I love that, you know, that Jars of Clay song. It talks about taking my world apart. It talks about God being what we need. It talks about being on our knees, completely broken before God, His created, His creation, you know, being in complete need of a Savior. Not just our souls, but physically, mentally, emotionally. One of the passages, in the Do Not Worry paragraph, says the pagans chase after these different things. The pagans worry about all this stuff. And I find that really funny, because here's one line in this song that really kind of stuck out, and says, turn away and not become another nail to pierce the skin of one who loves. More deeply than the oceans, more abundant than the tears of a world embracing every heartache. We love drama in America. I have never, ever, 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 when growing up, seen so many reality TV shows. What's a few of those reality TV shows out there besides Survivor? Should be a sin to watch reality TV shows. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's like a reality TV show or what, but it's Modern Family, in the middle.
Modern Family, Wife Swap. John's really, I love money. Okay, so, and you know, I swear, these reality shows, let's take Wife Swap for an example here, because it's really easy to see. They will take two wives and swap them, and they're with these families for like 2 weeks, right? Okay. Now, one show, they took a Christian wife and an atheist wife of an atheist family and swapped them. They will take two completely polar opposite families and, you know, swap the wives around. And what's their goal, what's their intent is to create the most drama as they possibly can. We thrive off of drama. We thrive off of heartache for some reason. It's the thing that gets us the most depressed. It's, you know, just the, yet we find the most joy out of it for some reason. It's what we want. You know, all this drama, we just kind of revolve around it. Don't know why exactly, but of a world embracing every heartache, I think it's part of feeling like this is who I am or something like that. Couldn't really tell you. But when it comes to us and God, when it comes to the struggles that we have, we like to hang on to that heartache. You know, think about our sin, right? What's the most difficult thing to do when you realize, you come to the realization that I'm a sinner? You don't go, oh, lovely, awesome, great, I'm a sinner. Right? I'm a sinner and I'm happy. I have done bad things in my life and I'm so glad I did it. Oh. I think when we come to the recognition that we're sinners, we are guilt-ridden. We are shameful, or we're ashamed. That's why lies are very uncomfortable to tell. You know, it's a horrible feeling to have. To be full of guilt, to be full of shame. But the cross plays a large role there, not just in healing our broken souls, but healing our broken consciences. And that's where we got to let go of guilt and shame at, too. That's where we got to surrender guilt and shame. Instead of embracing our heartache and living like we did years ago, or in how we lived years ago, that's where we got to break down and give that to God. He took it already. So that you can live as a new creation. So that you could live a better life. You know, He cleansed your conscience, He cleansed your soul. Your sins are in the past. It's time to start living like you're saved. But we cling tightly to that for some reason. You know, this is how I feel, and we like to hold on to that. Our prayers are like, you know, I'm a sinner. I'm ashamed. I'm full of guilt, and you know, and I'm just, you know, full of all these different things. And you know, instead of, oh, thank you. You know, Jesus Christ came, was born on this earth, walked my shoes, walked up to that cross and died for my sins. And took my sins far away, as far as the east is from the west. It's simple as letting it go, yet it's complicated. And so when we can't give thanks to God, It's not because God's complicated in his ways or in how he does things. It's because we overcomplicate things. We overcomplicate things, you know, when it comes to following God. We overcomplicate things when it comes to his gifts and what he gives us in life and the blessings that he pours out on us. I overcomplicate things because I am young and emotional. And, you know, I'm finding that it's just some matter of fact of saying, okay, God, here you go. I'm not going to worry about this anymore. I'll follow. I'll let you lead. I'll let you have it all. I don't know what I'm going to talk about next week, but I'm pretty sure you have something in mind. So, happily, I'll say, okay, I will give you full control of where you lead me. Full control over my future, full control over my ministry, full control over what I'm going to say on Sunday. I'll give it to you. And so, you know, you break, he peels away layers, kind of like onions. He peels layers away. Pride, 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 pride. He keeps peeling these layers away. He keeps, you know, tearing these walls down until he's at the core of who we are, and that's broken and on our knees before him, a creation who's in need, a creation who can't get anywhere without God, a creation who has no hope after they blow away in the wind like dust. You ever see a wave before? Those really small ones, you know, maybe if you've been up to Lake Michigan or seen the ocean or anything like that, which I haven't seen the ocean, so I'm going to say Lake Michigan. You watch this wave. It starts here, it kind of comes up, and it hits the shore, and that's it. 6 seconds long. Your life is the equivalent, probably less than, the lifespan of that wave next to eternity. We don't have the tree of life anymore. This world's not going to last that long. So our only hope for something beyond this world lies with God and the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made to cover us in his blood so that we may be atoned and be able to dwell up in heaven, you know, with God. And so, you know, there's this song that I really like, another song. Actually, no, we'll stick the Jars of Clay song. It says, "Take my world apart." And it talks about, you know, the death and it talks about the death of Jesus Christ and, you know, what he did and, you know, everything that he takes away from us. There is a passage in Hebrews that talks about the prophets, you know, in the old days. Jeremiah, let's use Jeremiah as an example here. He preached, he was called the weeping prophet. He preached for 40 years. I don't think he had a single convert. And did he say, oh man, I'm a failure as a prophet, I'm a failure at this and, you know, all that. And no, he did exactly what God called him to do. God already knew what the results were. They ended up going into captivity for 70 years. Imagine how depressing that is, you know, going out in the street every single day for 40 years straight, saying, destruction's coming, come on. Hey, you're going to be destroyed if you don't start changing things here. And nobody believed in you. In fact, being persecuted, probably being beaten, thrown into a well or a cistern. Cistern, was it? Okay, it's been a while since I read Jeremiah. But, and it's interesting because when it comes to ministry, you want to see the fruit of that ministry. You want to see the results of your hard work. You want to see lives changed. But sometimes that's not God's plan, that's not God's design. One of the greatest joys, in ministry is seeing a life changed. Somebody accepting Christ and coming under His blood and just growing to be, an amazing person. That's, I think, one of the greatest joys of ministry, but sometimes that's not what God is giving us. Sometimes God only gives us the ability to plant seeds, which we might never see the fruit of, ever. That's discouraging because you think you're not going anywhere, you think you're not doing it right, but God is calling us to even give that to Him. And so, this verse in Hebrews says, it's 11, chapter 13, or chapter 11, 13 through 16. It says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things that they were promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. The fruits of their ministry, they may have never seen. And they admitted they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things, that they're looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared for them a city. Wow. So, even though I did not get my reward here on earth, even if I don't see a single fruit in this ministry that God has called me to, I will still trust Him. I will still follow Him. I'll give it to Him. Because there's a better future. God is not ashamed to be called their God because He has prepared a city for them. It looks pretty bad when you don't meet one of your promises or when the plan doesn't go right from our perspective. But they got something better. And so, what's God calling us to give up here? The world. I think this is the greatest form of surrender. I think every category of our lives can fall under what we have in this world, what we invest in this world. Right? The hope of heaven is really at the core of being a Christian. It's how we can live as a light in a world like this. And when you invest in heaven, when you invest your entire life in heaven, you're not investing much in the world. Because you're called to live differently. You're called to give some things up. Sometimes it's the stuff that might make you happy. Sometimes it might be the stuff that gives you, the contentment that you wanted or, the way that you want to live your life. God says, if you give up the world, if you lose your life for me, there's something far much greater in the end. Do in secret, because your Father who is unseen knows. Don't seek your reward on earth, seek it in heaven. And so, give me Jesus, you can have this whole world. The prophets weren't too popular in their days. In fact, they were prophesying on behalf of God something that the other people didn't want to hear. So, you know, try to imagine, you know, being outcast from your own family and your own nation and doing the will of God. Sometimes that's something that can... What time is it? Is it really? Okay, I'll hurry up. I'm sorry. So, I'm rather long-winded. All right. And so I think, you know, I'll wrap this up here now. Okay, I think our prayer should be this, you know, take everything. Take my whole world. Be everything to me. Be all to me. Even if I don't like it. My desire is to obey you completely and fully. And to live my life underneath your lordship. Take my shame. Take my happiness. Take my contentment. Take my anger. Take my ministry, family, friends. Every arena of life. Make it yours. Now that doesn't mean that God doesn't give us some things to enjoy in life, because he has given us some things to enjoy in life. Friends, family. But those things aren't central. We aren't obedient to friends or family. We're obedient to God. And so even though it's a scary thing to let go of those things, how about letting go from somebody who can't tell you what happens 5 minutes in the future, meaning me? How about I let go and give it to somebody who knows what he's doing, knows what happens in the future? In Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans that I have for you, both to prosper you and to do you good, not to do you any harm. That's close. God is good all the time. And all the time, God is good. So, yeah, anyways. Just give it completely to him. And, you know, if you find it difficult to surrender some areas of your life to God, you have a church, a body of believers that will surround you and love you and encourage you, because they share one thing. They share Christ crucified. He is our Lord, the one that we love, the one that we desire to follow. So don't feel alone in the world, because you've got all these believers around you. Even though you might not be the same as your coworkers, your friends at school, anything like that. And so Lynn's kind of giving me the... So I'm going to cut it off right here. Oh, I know.